This is Fresh Air. The titles of Joe Keenan's novels, Putting on the Ritz and Blue Heaven, offer a clue to his passion, songwriting. Keenan is a lyricist. Although he hasn't yet made it to Broadway, he did win the 1990 Richard Rodgers Development Award. He's now working on a musical called The Times that he hopes will eventually open on Broadway. The main character in his new novel, Putting on the Ritz, is also a lyricist. The novel is a farce about a young lyricist, his musical collaborator, and their journalist friend. The journalist is writing an exposé about a wealthy New York developer and media mogul. The journalist enlists his songwriter friends to spy on the mogul by writing a cabaret act for his wife, a would-be chanteuse looking for material for her debut at the Rainbow Room. This is the opening of the novel, when the lyricist is still reeling from his recent musical flop.
I've noticed over the years that truly bad ideas like flus trains named for Asian capitals insidiously time their visits to occur during those periods when our defenses, reeling from some previous blow, are at their most tattered and flimsy. I see it all the time. Some friend or acquaintance who'd always seemed the very epitome of reason will be jilted by his lover or passed over for a promotion, and the next time I see him, he's talking about the marvelous career advice he's getting from his astrologer and would I like to buy some nutritional supplements. There are, of course, any number of crises capable of inducing this poignant tendency to grasp at straws. I can, however, say with some authority that few ordeals leave one half so limp and suggestible as the ordeal I had suffered a mere 2 weeks before my story begins. I refer to the spectacular and highly public demise of a musical play to which one has devoted the last 3 years of one's life. The show, a cheeky satire of network television, was called Here for the Season. The book and lyrics were by me, and the music was by my longtime friend and collaborator, Claire Simmons. Its failure, like that of most flops, was the end result of a whole series of dire miscalculations. If pressed, though, to name the one decision that really drove a stake through the thing's heart, it would be my agreement to accept as co-librettist our renowned director's 24-year-old boyfriend. Claire, whose radar at such times is more functional than my own, argued against it, but I felt that the script needed only minor changes, and the youngster, who seemed amiable enough, was not seeking a dominant role so much as a ride on our coattails. This proved incorrect. We soon learned that our co-author, far from being amiable, was a violently opinionated young man who, when contradicted, displayed a temper that called to mind Caligula with a toothache. To make matters worse, the director's only response to his paramour's screaming fits was to scream louder. If you want an idea of what our average rehearsal was like, rent a martial arts film and watch the last 20 minutes. Chaos reigned. Actors quit, songs were cut, scenes came and went with dizzying speed, and the whole gossamer fabric of the show unraveled like a congressman's alibi.
That's a great opening. I'm wondering if you ever had a musical flop.
Not yet, but I'm young.
Well, have you had anything open yet?
I had a little off-Broadway review called Close Enough for Jazz, but it was strictly not off-Broadway, actually. It was off-Broadway, and that was a limited run. The only thing I've done since is this show, The Times, which I've been working on for about 3 years now. I took a hiatus from my musical writing career to write Blue Heaven.
That was your first novel.
It was my first novel.
Yeah, I know the question you're supposed to ask songwriters is what comes first, the music or the lyrics, but, you know, I'm tempted to ask you which came first, the novels or the songs.
Well, I've been writing songs for a long time. Since I was in high school and college, I had little musicals that I wrote and were produced at my high school and then in college. When I got to New York, I worked on a play called Vinaigrette, which had an equity workshop, which ran about 8 weeks, but was not really produced after that. And then I went into NYU when I was only 24. And that kept me busy until I was 26. And when I got out of that, I began the novel. So my songwriting career keeps getting pushed off in favor of other things which are easier to get off the ground and, in the main, more lucrative.
Why is writing a book easier to get off the ground than songwriting?
Well, because it's non-collaborative. To be honest, I find it much simpler. I find songwriting incredibly difficult. Well, it's not incredibly difficult, but it's much more time-consuming. A song that takes only 3 or 4 minutes to sing can consume a month of your time, because lyric writing is just a time-consuming craft.
Stephen Sondheim says that he loves writing songs because they're like puzzles, and he loves puzzles. But do you hate that aspect of it, where everything has to fit so perfectly?
No, you can love it or hate it. It's just the way that it works.
Yeah.
I find it frustrating, of course, because Sondheim is a very frustrating man for all lyricists to deal with because he's demonstrated just how high the art can be taken, and those who appreciate that set a new level of craftsmanship for themselves, with the result that everything takes a great deal longer to do. But I believe they take him a damn long time as well. He's always talking about how many drafts things go through,
mm-hmm.
and what an arduous and time-consuming practice it is. You just have to be very, very patient. Whereas I find prose flows very easily. I mean, it's not simplicity itself, but if I sit down to write prose, I can usually write 3 or 4 pages a day. And in the same month it would take me to write one technically complicated lyric, I can write 50 pages.
So what got you to sit down and write your first novel?
What happened was I had long wanted to try something in this vein because I was a big fan of Woodhouse and wondered why not just Woodhouse but E.F. Benson, another light comic novelist, and wondered why nobody seemed to be doing it anymore. And I found myself between semesters at NYU living at home with my parents because I'd had to leave one apartment and I was going to move in with my lover but had to wait 4 months until his sister had moved out and gone to Japan. And I began writing my lover 7 or 8 page letters every day. And after a couple of weeks of that, I said, well, if I can write 7 or 8 pages of prose every day, maybe I'll try a short story, because I had never attempted fiction. And the story willy-nilly bloomed into blue heaven.
My guest is Joe Keenan. His new novel is called Putting on the Ritz. More after the short break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is novelist and lyricist Joe Keenan. The musical that you've been working on, The Times, has a song in it about an imaginary book review. We actually have a tape of this song, and I'd like for you to explain the context of it, and this will help us tie together your two careers of literature and songwriting.
Well, the musical is called The Times, and it's actually a good deal more grim in its intent than any of my comic fiction. It's about life among the 98% of the people who come to New York full of artistic dreams and aspirations and find that they do not succeed and that they're staring at early middle age and nothing has happened to them. And how you cope with that, particularly in the context of a society which is always dividing the winners from the losers and holding out the carrot for you. And at any rate, the main character is a frustrated novelist who's been working on a very big, overly ambitious book for about 6 or 7 years. And this is his fantasy review. In the show, it's clear that he imagines that John Updike is singing this in a front page review in the Sunday Times book review section.
Who will we hear singing with?
It's a very talented man named Nick Wyman, who is in the original cast of Phantom of the Opera, and the other singer that you'll hear is a man named Stuart Zagnit.
Who wrote the music? You wrote the lyrics.
The music was written by my very talented collaborator, Mr. Brad Ross.
Once, maybe twice, in every generation, there appears on the scene a genius in his prime, armed with a book that's an eloquent summation of his people and his nation and his culture and his time. And I have read such a book, profound but also clever, and composed in a style beguiling and sublime. There have been epics before, but absolutely never as enthralling an endeavor as...
What am I calling it this week?
Epics before, but absolutely never as enthralling an endeavor as... Whatever, here is a tale of madness and salvation by a man who's begun a wonderful career. Theodore Henry Harrison's a visionary voice, welcoming comparisons to Twain and James and Joyce. And what a book he's produced! Why, Proust would have to cheer, for the great American novelist is here.
Have you been reading a lot of book reviews to figure out what cliches you wanted to get into the song?
Well, at the time I wrote that song, which is about 2 years ago, I certainly spent a lot of time reading book reviews, looking for the catchphrases that go into overly florid rave reviews.
Let's get back to your new novel. The main character in this novel is a lyricist who's just had a failed show, and he gets this offer to write a club act for a very, very, very wealthy woman. She's the wife of a very, very, very wealthy developer.
She's very wealthy. In fact, it's said of her that she ovulates Fabergé eggs.
Yes. You play with a lot of the cliches of the club acts, the way, you know, the autobiographical patter works into the anthem-like songs. So what were some of the cliches that you wanted to make sure to get in?
The cliches of cabaret? Well, just the extravagant melodrama that some singers bring to a lot of their songs, the penchant for autobiographical excess. People, too many people, it seems, model their cabaret acts around their personal experience and assume incorrectly that there is no facet of their life which is of not inordinate fascination to the audience at large. And they look for very tenuous autobiographical links to the songs that they want to sing. More than anything, it's just extravagantly bad over-emotional singing. It was one of the cliches that I wanted to have some fun with.
You wrote an excerpt of a song for your book, a song called Hard to Be Me. And this is a song that the lyricist in the book, the main character, comes up with for this wealthy woman who's putting together a club act. Can you recite a little bit of the song and describe what you were getting at, what kind of song you were getting at with this?
Well, the song was something that they had not written for the woman. They'd already written it before they went in, and they decided very daringly to audition with the piece. It's the song is described as the lament of a filthy rich socialite who's telling her maid how fortunate the servant is not to lead a life so glamorous and exhausting as her own. And what it's really getting at is the propensity of the rich to moan and kvetch about their lives as if they were not lives, you know, chock full of privilege. Some of the lines include, although you may think it's all trinkets and mink, it's hard to be me. Another section is, the staff that needs training, the mad entertaining night after night, and even complaining is terribly draining if you're doing it right.
You describe the book as a musical comedy kind of reality. Do you think of that as what you're doing, taking the musical comedy sensibility and putting it into a novel form?
I think that would be a fair approximation of the style and effect of the books, yes. But musical comedy not in the contemporary sense, but musical comedy in the 30s and 40s sense.
Kind of Noel Coward,
things were
Cole Porter.
Lighter and larkier.
Yeah, yeah. Do you ever feel like you're not in the right era? I mean, do you ever wish that you were living in an era when there was more musical comedy?
Well, no. To the extent that I seem to be one of very few people doing this, I don't think I'm in the wrong era at all. There are times when I think it might have been nicer living back then, but then I think of other aspects of life in previous decades. You know, for instance, the dreadful institutionalized homophobia, where gay people, where a gay writer could not write frankly about his character's sexuality at all. And I think that, you know, those decades would not have been so hospitable as they may seem from this distance.
Joe Keenan's new novel is called Puttin' on the Ritz.